Welcome to the H2H Human Connection Done Right Summit, bringing together forward-thinking leaders who understand that true innovation happens when people, process, and technology work in harmony. Lean into this refreshing, energizing experience designed to inspire you with a new approach to a timeless principle. Our speakers will offer fresh insights that will challenge perspectives and spark new ideas.
Imagine with me, if you will, that you are sitting behind your computer, so pleased with the way that your technology has been adopted by your users, whether they are your internal employees or your customers, but everything that you thought would happen with your technology has come true. The promise that you delivered from that initial demo, that initial implementation, is now being realized because everybody who's on the other end of your technology is using it precisely as designed. You've done it. You've designed the next iPhone. Anytime somebody opens the box of your technology, they're using it without receiving a lot of instruction, any headache or frustration. And that is because you were able to take some of the tips and tricks that you learned here today in this session, Human-Centered Design for Technology User Adoption. I am Dr. Shannon Grigg, and I am pleased to lead you on this journey today, knowing that you're going to come out of this with some immediate tips and tricks that you're going to be able to use to make that technology really soar. Now, why are we here today in this H2H Summit thinking about human-centered design for technology user adoption? And the reason why we're doing that is because so much of the time when we think about that beautiful golden triangle of people, process, and technology, we've got three legs of a stool that are really unbalanced. You've been there before. You pull up into your favorite local pub, you sit down at the stool, and one of those legs is just a little off. Now, maybe you solve that problem by shoving a few sugar packets underneath it, but I can tell you the last time I tried to put some sugar packets inside of technology code, it did not work in my favor. So what can we do? How can we make sure that we've got a golden triangle that is completely harmonized and all three of those triangle corners are working together? Well, we're going to look at academic theory and we're going to tie it to practical application so that you can think about all of the things that will help to drive you into that perfect symbiotic triangle so that your people, process, and technology are working together. I spent almost half of a decade researching this problem, trying to understand why won't users use, specifically in the case of my research, CRM and its registered and related applications. And a lot of times we found out there were things that were being misunderstood, misinterpreted, or completely ignored. And most of the time, that tied back to the people. Your technology might be completely beautiful. It may be aligned to the process that it's trying to be solve, but the people aren't always in alignment. And I'm going to tell you how and then why you can fix this problem. First, I want to talk about adult learner theory. So as we think about adults, we know that there is something called andragogy that's similar and related to pedagogy, which you might know that PED prefix is pediatrics. That means children. So when you think about adults, that andragogy, they learn things that they want to learn. Adults, probably like you sitting here today, opt into their learning. So they decide what the things are that work really well for them, and then they go do it. So if you've got an adult who's being told, you have to learn this technology, you have to use this for your work, they're going to feel like it's being given to them, not developed for them. And so as you think about your technology rollout, and there are really three academic theories that we're going to talk about here today, adult learner is one for you to really be thoughtful about. So how can I meet adults where they are? You probably have heard about the theory of there being different types of learners. Visual learners, who are people that like to see things being done and then they can do it themselves. Auditory learners, Those are my podcast lovers out there, people that like to hear things and then they ingest them. And kinesthetic learners, those are the ones that have to do to understand. Well, the reality is, no adult is really just one of those at one time. They're often a real mix of all of those things. So as you're designing your tutorials, your training, your documentation, your user acceptance testing, you have to think about how different adult learner types are going to come into action and how you can tickle them when you're trying to get them to understand how to use your technology in their current workday. So, as you're pulling through that concept of the adult learners, as best you can, you want to engage them ahead of time. So, get their perspective prior to rolling out the new technology, the announcement of the new technology, the training for the new technology, and understand what is it that would be helpful to them. So, how can these adults be brought along inside? So, make sure that they are involved in the planning and the evaluation and how they are being instructed. If you're working with salespeople and you are putting out a 60-minute training video, I can guarantee you none of them are sitting down with bated breath waiting to watch that training. That's not how they work. So think about how you can tie your training to the way that these adults are going to learn, and asking them is the best way to get inside of there. Next, pushing into their experience. What are the things that they already know? How can you build upon that? Are there people in the team that are coming with a more understanding of what your technology is? Or are there people who are really far behind when it comes to that technology learning curve? So think about what their experience is as you roll out the training. And sometimes you will be able to find ways to address learners who are at different components of where they are in their learning cycle. Next, I really want you to think about the relevance and impact. That's the WIFM. What's in it for me? That's what all of the people who are receiving your technology training are going to be asking themselves. Why am I here? And then finally, make it problem-centered. Here's what this technology is going to do for you. Here's a case study. Here's a person just like you that has used it, and this is how that's helped them. So, adult learner theory is the first thing that I want you to think about as you're thinking of how to use human-centered design for technology user adoption. The second big theory we're going to talk about is change management. Everyone talks about change management, and most people do not do change management. So, the first trick I want to tell you is make sure that by the time you're helping your users understand what your technology is going to do, is recognize that they're joining you where they are, not where you are. So, you might have been thinking about this implementation or this launch for a really long time. You have to help catch them up to where you are. So, if you're thinking about the ways that they're going to assimilate and use the new technology that you're rolling out to them, your change management approach really has to meet them where they are. There is a really simple tool that I really like. It is one of the seminal change management theories. It came out in 1967. It came from Lewin, and his change management theory has three simple steps. And I love this one because it is really easy for you to think about, regardless of what you're doing to your technology, from making one small change to rolling out something brand new. And the first is you have to unfreeze. That concept of this is the way we've always done it, pull that back and start to change the way that it's been done, question the way that it's been done, understand why it's always been done that way. And you start to unfreeze as if what your problem is an ice cube where they currently are. The second step in the Lewin three-step theory is to make the change. So as you start to pull back on, this is why this isn't working, this is why we've thought about doing things in a different way, you've got that moment where you start to make the change. And this can involve loads of different steps. This may be where your training is. This may be where your user acceptance training or user acceptance testing, which is a type of training, is. This is where you are starting to build those quick wins. You're identifying case studies from within. You're identifying the people who are your cheerleaders who are going to tell their peers, this is why I'm using the thing that I'm using, and this is how it's going to work for you. And then finally, the third step in the Lewin change management theory is refreeze. This is where you make that habit stick. If you're familiar with gamification or leaderboards or days without an accident, Those types of visible ways are really good ways to help people maintain the shift that they're making with their change management. So, as you're thinking through that, that's a really easy way to dig into change management theory. Now, of course, there are much bigger, broader, more detailed change management theories that can be followed depending on the complexity of the technology that you're rolling out and what it's replacing. So, if you're moving from, say, a HubSpot CRM, Sales Hub, which is a little less feature rich, to a Salesforce Sales Cloud CRM, which is a little bit more challenging to use as a user, your change management approach really might be different than if you're moving from a pen and paper, Excel-based Google Sheet CRM straight to Salesforce. So the change management theory that you apply to what it is that you're trying to change is going to be completely relevant to how big the scope is of what it is you're trying to change. Now, the third academic theory that I want to tell you about that really pulls into technology user adoption is the diffusion of innovations theory. When you think about diffusion of innovations, this sounds like science because that is exactly what they're trying to tell you about. So the concept here is there is a diffusion. So when you think about a diffuser and a hair dryer, that's exactly what I want you to picture here. How does an idea get spread? How do more people start to learn about your technology and how it can work? So, sticking with a concept of CRM, if you've got somebody who's using your CRM in a really nice way, you want to be able to pull that person out to speak to everybody else, use them as a case study, say, hey, we've got here an account executive who's used this new object that we built in our CRM system, and they've actually increased their deal velocity. They were able to retire their quota 10% faster. So, as you're starting to think about that diffusion of innovations, this is where, one, you better come with data, facts, and figures. Two, you need to equip the people who are going to be your cheerleaders and help spread that information for you. And three, you want to be able to make sure that that adoption curve is something that you've really thought about. So, the diffusion of innovations curve is a traditional bell-shaped curve, and it starts with innovators and early adopters, and they make a small component. These are the folks that you definitely want to get on your side so they can help spread your idea. They're going to carry it through to the majority, and in the middle of that bell curve is an early majority and a late majority, and they're making up over 60% of the people who are going to use your technology. And then at the end, you've got laggards. And the laggards are the folks that I personally love to involve. If you remember, a couple of minutes ago, we talked about involved adult learners. Ask the laggards, how are you going to respond to this? How do you want to learn about this? Those are the folks that you're going to have the biggest challenge with when you're thinking about user adoption. So, as you think about that innovation adoption curve, starting from innovators and early adopters, moving all the way to laggards, the way that your technology gets rolled out and adopted is something that is going to happen at a specific velocity and pace, but it will follow that bell-shaped curve. Technologies always do. Now, how can you design your technology moving from these academic theories of adult learner, diffusion of innovations, and change management, and moving all the way into making sure that you're practically applying these for an application that will allow you to have technology that is heavily adopted by your users, which is the goal? That's utopia. There is a really specific theory that was put out by Stanford, and it's called Design Thinking for Innovation, and it has five components. And this is something that should be addressed really early on, and it should be tested continuously. And the first is empathize. Now, again, sticking with the concept of CRM, if you've got a beautiful, wonderful technologist who can write the most pristine code that you've ever seen, but they never once have carried a bag, had a quota on their back, been afraid of losing their job at the end of the month because they aren't able to retire their quota fully, The empathy may not be there, and it's really critical that this component is considered as you're thinking about technology user adoption. Why? That coder who's sitting in front of the computer is somebody who is likely to be someone who sits still, who pays attention, who can get really deep in code, can adjudicate it, and understand if it's doing what it needs to do. Those things do not at all describe a salesperson who doesn't have time to make 17 clicks to close an opportunity record. So, making sure that you are developing your technology with empathy is number one in the design thinking for innovation model. The second is define, and this goes beyond just gathering user requirements and writing really nice user stories, but instead, this is saying, how will this be used? Where will this be used? If we are looking at people, understanding the jobs to be done framework, how can we say we can meet the definition of what would solve their problem? Because that's exactly what we want their technology to do, is solve their problem, even if they don't know that they have it yet. The third step in design thinking for innovation is ideate. And that's when you're starting to come up with concepts and ideas and you're micro testing them. If you've ever read The Lean Startup by Eric Ries, this is what he was talking about. Bringing the ideas out, field testing them with a focus group of your potential users, and then making some changes to make sure that you are addressing their biggest needs. Then you move into prototype. So the fourth concept in the design thinking for innovation is to prototype. So after you've moved through empathizing, defining, ideating, prototyping, you are then going to test. And testing is critical. Testing can happen in all sorts of ways. You're testing your technology internally, you're testing your technology with users. And I really want you here to think about those innovators and early adopters, and those laggards, because they're going to be critical as you test what it is you're rolling out. Say, for example, you're going to be adding in a price book model to your CRM system. Test that against your salespeople who love to use their CRM because they know how it moves them forward in their job. See what those innovators and early adopters think about it, and then test it against the laggards. See where they get stuck, watch where their eyes move, understand the questions that they have, because that feedback is going to be critical for you to say, aha, I know exactly where the people in the people process technology triangle are going to get stuck using our technology, which will then prevent them from adopting it. That's going to be really helpful as you're thinking how to move that forward. Of course, you want to integrate this concept of design thinking for innovation early on. It should be something that you're thinking about as you're developing your technology. It should be something that you're thinking about as you're deploying your technology. So, as you're moving these things forward, you want to come back and revisit this concept continually because people are expecting you to do it. Now, there are loads of applications out there that say, we are an application that will help people to adopt your technology. And that says to me, your technology is too complex to be used early on. Do we expect that there is going to be some complexity when it comes to heavily regulated environments, some really challenging controls? You betcha. We definitely do. But we also want to think, just like the iPhone that I mentioned earlier, about how people could unbox your product and understand really quickly how to use it. So, pulling back through, thinking about those user adoption theories is just going to be critical from the very first moment that you're thinking about rolling this out. How can you put this into action? So you're sitting there right now saying, great, that sounds perfect to me. I understand exactly where you're coming from when it comes from the academic perspective, but how am I going to put this into action? So you want to make sure that you are considering these three theories from the beginning and then rolling that Stanford Design for Innovation throughout. You can do this by loads of ways. You are now going to be enabled by me to be a field researcher. So you're going to look and see How do people do their job? How are they currently doing it? You need to have a really good understanding of that. So when you go out to champion your technology and you're enabling the rest of the people who have been pulled in by you through that change management as the cheerleaders of your technology, they are going to be able to pull this story through as well because you have done a participatory research where you have sat and watched the way that they do their job so you can address that as you roll yours out. Hey, I've seen the way that you've done this before. You sit down and you enter things with your fingers into a Google Sheet, and I've watched what happens when you share it to somebody else and they overwrite or they shift a column and you completely miss an entire row of data that took care of an entire day's worth of work for you. Once you're able to do that, you'll get the street cred that allows them to say, okay, this person understands what I've done, and I know that they've thought about this as they've put their new technology in front of me. And when I say new technology, I don't just mean a brand new application. I also mean an update or an enhancement or a bug fix, because these types of things should be thought about all of the time. You also are going to be doing ethnographic research. So you're going to interview people so that you can say, guess what? Mike, the SDR, told me this is exactly the challenge that he's experiencing. And I understand that everybody else on the SDR team has the same problem. So as you're starting to think about this, you're coming with some actual relevance and credibility because you're able to address what the actual problem is of your users. That then drives an understanding. And the understanding says, I really was being thoughtful about the problems that you have, and that's what my technology is trying to solve for you. What you don't want to do is develop technology that is a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. You don't want to be a solution looking for a problem. You want to be able to say, I understand what your problem is, and I was able to develop a solution for it, and here's how you're going to find out how to use it at your best. Then finally, when you're thinking about your modeling and your prototyping, make sure that you have a really open way and an identifiable way for your users to feed back to you the issues that they have. There's nothing more frustrating for a user than when they find a bug or something behaves in a way that they weren't expecting and they can't let you know about it. So, I am so pleased that you are paying attention to ways that you can consider your user when you're thinking about how they adopt their technology. We all know this is the Achilles heel of many go-to-market technology applications, and it's not something that people want to talk about all of the time. So you've made the right choice by paying attention to these user adoption theories, adult learner, diffusion of innovations, and change management, and the way that you can apply human-centered design to solve your technology user adoption problems. Thank you so much for joining me today, and best of luck to you as you roll out your new technology application.
Thank you for joining us in today's forward-thinking session of Human Connection Done Right. As we transition to our next expert speaker, remember that together we are redefining the future. To stay engaged and informed, visit revenue-bydesign.com, where together we will be deliberate, be intentional, and be successful.